Annie McManus is not only a world-class DJ and internationally renowned broadcaster, she is now also known as a Sunday Times best-selling author and has just released her second novel. The Mess We're In follows Orla Quinn, a young Irish woman who arrives in London with hopes of making a career in music. And to tell us more, I'm delighted to say Annie McManus is on the line. Annie, how are you?
Hi Jennifer, how's it going? Nice to be with you this morning.
It's lovely to chat to you. Now, I'm sure you've been introduced as a world-class DJ and internationally renowned broadcaster before, but how does it feel to be introduced as an author? I mean, are you used to that yet?
No, in a word, still not. And still kind of weirdly... I would never be able to call myself it. Like, someone asked me yesterday, a taxi driver was like, oh, so what do you do? And I was like, God, what do I do? What do I do? And I was kind of saying, well, I kind of do music and I kind of write books. But saying the word author feels, I don't feel legitimate enough yet to say that word.
Can you tell us about The Mess We're In?
Yes, I can. So it's a book that is, I suppose, a coming-of-age novel is what people would call it. It's about a young Irish girl coming to London, and she wants to get into music production, and her mum and dad have split up back home, and she has a little sister back home, and she is pretty wild and pretty chaotic as a girl, and throws herself into London life, throws herself into this the music scene, has to work in two different jobs to get by, and it's basically about her, I suppose, the year that she arrives in London and trying not to be swallowed up by the city, you know, trying not to be knocked sideways by it, and I hope that the reader gets a sense by the end of the book that she's able to stand on her own two feet, you know, and you kind of get a glimpse into how she will progress. But it's just a zooming in, I suppose, of that time when you arrive in a city and everything is so new and visceral and just so overwhelming, I suppose.
Now, Annie, you're very clear that the book is not autobiographical, but there are elements of Orla's story that you could certainly relate to. Isn't that right?
Definitely, yeah, that's it. So she also, so basically I moved to London around the same time as Orla, so I set it at that time deliberately to use whatever fragments of memory I have of the time when I moved to London to try and take advantage of those, the sensory memories, the kind of the memories of living with my own brother's rock band. So just using those as kind of inspiration to then write this story, I suppose. And then also, I suppose, it's kind of nearly 25 years of living in London as well that I wanted to put into it in another way. So it kind of zooms in at this time and place in the turn of the century, 2001, 2002, of kind of northwest London. But I also wanted to show and kind of try and write in how it feels, I suppose, to have lived in London this long as an Irish person, and to kind of explore the conflicts when it comes to your sense of identity when you've lived away from home for this long. And I suppose the kind of that push and pull feeling, you know, where you don't really know which side, or not its sides, but which place you belong to more, and that kind of feeling of being in the middle of things, I suppose.
So it's a bit of a love letter as well to London. I mean, in a way, although you do also outline how difficult it is to break into London, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a love letter to London. And I suppose I kind of wanted to show just like when you move to a city that big and it's kind of endless, it's edgeless, it's very hard to get your head around just how big it is. So I kind of wanted to show how kind of overwhelming that can feel. There's a scene when she arrives in Camden and she's all excited to get to Camden, and then she kind of zooms out a bit and she realizes that this place, Camden alone, seems enormous. And this is Camden Town. How many towns are there in London? Yeah. If this is just one town, you know. So I wanted to show that. I suppose I do love London. I've lived there for so, so long now. And I just really enjoyed writing about it as a place I'd love to do it more, actually.
Speak it, and then you'll be able to call yourself an author, finally, you know, get a few books under your belt, Annie.
I know.
But
don't
come
know
here, I'm always interested to know. Sophie White, friend of the show, has many books, and I'm like, how do you do it? You know, you're a mother, you're very busy. Mm. I know she takes herself off for a few days, sometimes to the West, sometimes. How do you sit down and write? Where do you do it? How do you do it?
So I would normally do it first thing in the morning. That's my best time. Get the kid, pack the kids off to school, mm-hmm. get them out the door, go straight down. I've got a little office at the end of my garden, and sit there and try and turn off WhatsApp and all like outside distractions and just get stuck in for 2 or 3 hours in the morning. That's the dream. And then you'd go and you'd have a few meetings and then come back and do editing and stuff as much as you can in the afternoon. But what I'm determined to do for this next book, if it ever happens, it's like I haven't even thought about what it would be, but I've thought about how I want it to be. And I know that I want to think about it for the whole year, just think about what I'm going to write, and then put aside like a month next year to do that, to go away for a week here, a week there, and really just completely immerse. Like, you know, we'll write for 12 hours a day. You know, like you see in them cop programs, and they have like post-it notes over an entire room.
You know, that's
what I want.
I love it.
I want a whole room full of post-it notes from floor to ceiling.
You're easily pleased. Yeah. And providing everything goes well and you get that done, no kid gets sick and nothing, life doesn't get in the way. I wish you the best with that. Just going back to you moving to London, you have talked about your parents just being so supportive of your ambition. How important is that while trying to make it in an industry like this?
Oh my God, like I don't think you can really put it into words how important it is. I mean, it's really important for me to always say that it's all very well for me to sit here and say, oh, I've had, been a great career and podcasting and DJing. But my parents are so intrinsic to that. You know, they're the ones who encouraged me to go to Belfast initially, to go to Queens, and they helped, you know, pay for my digs, and my dad lent me the money for the course that I did to get me to England. And so all that stuff is, you know, it's there's no way I would be doing what I did without them, without their help and their support. But I suppose also that the kind of, if you even take away the money aspect, it's just, I suppose, a kind of trust.
Yeah.
I think it's important to trust your kids to know themselves and to know what they want to do. And as you know, I think parents are, there's so many well-intentioned parents out there, me included, who can't help but kind of put their own agenda on their kids, you know, with the best possible agenda intention. And I think it's really important to try and allow them to be them and figure out a path and support them and enable them, but not try and kind of put them in a box. And my parents were very good at that, just letting me figure that out for myself.
Wow.
So I'm very grateful for it.
Now, I was listening to your podcast, Changes with Annie McManus, and you did talk about how having children changed your life. And how you'd never known a female DJ who also has children. And I was like, oh my God, yes, we don't know anybody else.
Obviously there's loads of radio DJs, but what I mean by that is touring DJs,
yes.
You know, big headline, you know, Calvin Harris style DJs. You know, there's not that many mammies out there doing that. And it's not easy. And I think it's not just DJing. Like, I had my book launch last night and Lady Pete was there from Lancome and she was talking about being a mammy now. And it's very hard negotiating being on the road as a female artist and a mum. I think you could say it's the same, like you could say it for parents, but I do think that the majority in my experience of parents I know, who, like male dads, have their wives or partners who will support them and take the flack and, you know, look after the kids when they're on tour. But it doesn't happen so much the other way around. And I think it would be really helpful, I suppose, for there to be some sort of a WhatsApp group for mums in music to be able to just talk and figure out how it's done. I mean, there's no fixed way. You have, you know, you want to bring your kid on the road when they're a baby, maybe. That's easier. But when they get to 3 or 4, that's when it gets really difficult. And it's really, really hard to navigate. Basically, I stopped. Whenever I had my second kid, my international DJ career kind of stopped because I also got offered this job on Radio 1 to do a nightly show. So I was able to pick the kind of safe and secure option of doing that nightly show and knowing I'd be close to home and near my kids. But by doing that, I then kind of sacrificed, you know, the Ibiza residencies and the Australian and American tours and that kind of thing. So you have to pick and choose, unfortunately.
You do. How do you feel then when people ask if women can have it all?
Well, I don't think anyone can have it all. I mean, you probably could, but you'd be miserable.
Be wrecked.
And I think that's the key. Like, I've definitely tried to do that in my life. After my first kid, I was like, this kid's not stopping me. I'm going to keep going. I'm ambitious. I want to do more and more and more. And I did. And it was great for a while. But the second time around, I really knew that I didn't want it to be the same. So I think for me, it's about choice. The main thing is about choices. If you should have whatever you want as a woman, as long as it is your choice and you are empowered to make that choice.
And when you look at it like that, you don't feel resentful or hard done by the choices you make when you look at it like that. But I know some women think it's choosing a career over children or whatever, but it's not at all. And you're so right. Everybody's so different and are on their own path. And there's this guilt that we feel sometimes, isn't there? That, oh God, you feel a guilt to your work colleagues and then you feel a guilt to your children
no,
as well.
100%.
We need to get over that.
But like, we must say that, you know, you can't just dismiss this as, you know, women's problems. This is it's a systemic issue. And until you get leave for fathers when babies are born, then nothing's going to change, basically. We need to follow the lead of places like Iceland and stuff like that, where
they know how to do it, don't they?
Yes, where parental leave is equal, and you get a year off between you, and you can do, you know, that is crucial because there needs to be less stigma about men being able to take 3, 4, 5, 6 months off when their baby's born and let the mum go back to work. That, until that happens, I don't think anything's going to change. Nowhere near quick enough, anyway.
Annie, are your kids into music? Tell me.
Yes, they are. They are, actually. Their dad is also a music producer, and he's not really like a dad that, you know, he's not like sitting down on the floor doing Lego with them, but his way of playing with them is basically he makes music videos with them and makes songs with them. So he'll sit in his laptop and they'll make a song together.
Amazing.
So they've been doing that since they were very young, and they have a good sensibility of making music and creating music, which is cool, I think.
So is he going to go, let's go make a music video, leave mom down the garden with a post-it notes and everything will be fine?
I'm like, off you go. Show me in a few hours. I look forward to seeing the premiere of the music video. Yeah,
deadly.
That's what happens, genuinely.
A very creative house. Finally, what's next for Annie McManus? What's on the cards for you?
Well, we've got a busy summer. Going to be doing festivals and stuff. I'm back here in a couple of weeks doing Forbidden Fruit, which I'm really excited about. Never played that festival before. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be out and about in festivals over in the UK, Parklife and Glastonbury and We Are Festival and loads of them. And then my podcast is trucking along. That's going really well. I'm feeling really good. And I'm doing a big Before Midnight event, which is my new club night, which basically starts at 7 and ends at midnight. I'm doing an outdoor event in London for the first time at Finsbury Park in August. So that's quite exciting. And then all the time, I hope I will be thinking about a new book. But,
yes.
Yeah,
every time I see a post-it now, I'll be thinking of you.
Good.
Finally.
At the moment, there's just like post-its with question marks written on them. That's all that's on there right now.
Finally, can I ask you, do you feel that you finally have the right balance in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think my idea of success has completely changed in the last few years. And that's been a really liberating thing for me, actually, this idea of changing what your own definition of success is. So as opposed to success being kind of defined by, I suppose, numbers and stats and graphs and, you know, listeners and ticket buyers and all that, it's more just success as fulfillment and feeling stimulated and peaceful at the same time, getting that balance right. So at the moment, the balance is there and it feels good. But I know and I have learned that it's a constant work in progress, and you just have to constantly keep checking in with yourself, seeing how things feel and tweaking all the time. And as long as you're doing that, it's all you can do, really.
I think that happens when you turn 40. I think you get an
You get
awful,
way more in tune with yourself,
you?
I think.
Yeah, you start to check in with yourself more. I think. Well, that's what happened for me anyway. So anybody who's approaching 40, don't have a mental breakdown like myself. It's going to be okay.
It's a good feeling in the end.
It is a good feeling. Annie, listen, best of luck with the book. Thank you so much for taking the call. And hopefully we get to chat again soon.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Bye,
Thanks for
Annie.
Having me.
Bye. There we go. That is Annie McManus. The new book is The Mess We're In, is available right now. And for more information on Annie's writing and where you can catch your DJing, just go to AnnieMcManus.com. Two Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.